Question Directions, Part B. In Part B of the listening section, you will hear several longer conversations and talks. Each conversation or talk is followed by several questions. The conversations, talks, and questions will not be repeated. The conversations and talks are about a variety of topics. You do not need special knowledge of the topics to answer the questions correctly. Rather, you should answer each question on the basis of what is stated or implied by the speakers in the conversations or talks. For most of the questions, you will need to click on the best of four possible answers. Some questions will have special directions. The special directions will appear in a box on the computer screen. Listen to a class discussion.
It seems to me that the question is not whether the metric system should be introduced in the United States, but rather how it should be introduced.
I think that it should be done gradually to give everyone enough time to adjust.
Yes, perhaps we could even have two systems for a while. I mean, we could keep the English system and use metrics as an optional system.
That's what they seem to be doing. When you go to the grocery store, look at the labels on the cans and packages. They are marked in both ounces and grams.
Right. I've noticed that too. And the weather reporters on radio and TV give the temperature readings in both degrees Fahrenheit and degrees Celsius now.
Some road signs have the distances marked in both miles and kilometers, especially on the interstate highways. What do you think, Professor Baker?
Well, I agree that gradual adoption is better for those of us who have already been exposed to the English system of measurement, but I would favor teaching only metrics in the elementary schools.
I see your point. It might be confusing to introduce two systems at the same time.
18. What is the topic under discussion? Number 19. What changes in measurement in the United States have the students observed? Number 20. What was Professor Baker's opinion? Number 21. Which word best describes Professor Baker's attitude toward his students? Listen to part of a lecture in a science class.
Since the National Aeronautics and Space Administration was established in 1961, NASA has been engaged in an extensive research effort, which in cooperation with private industry has transferred technology to the international marketplace. Hundreds of everyday products can be traced back to the space mission, including cordless electrical tools, airtight food packaging, water purification systems, and even scratch coating for eyeglasses. In addition, many advances in medical technology can be traced back to NASA laboratories. First used to detect flaws in spacecraft, ultrasound is now standard equipment in almost every hospital for diagnosis and assessment of injuries and disease. Equipment first used by NASA to transmit images from space to Earth is used to assist in cardiac imaging. And lasers, first used to test satellites, are now used in surgical procedures. Under-the-skin implants for the continuous infusion of drugs and small pacemakers to regulate the heart were originally designed to monitor the physical condition of astronauts in space. Finally, with the help of images that were obtained during space missions and NASA technology, archaeologists have been able to explore the Earth. Cities lost under desert sands have been located and rediscovered. And the seafloor has been mapped using photographs from outer space.
22. What is the talk mainly about?
23. Which of the advances listed are not mentioned as part of the technology developed for space missions? According to the speaker, why did NASA develop medical equipment? 25. Why does the speaker mention archaeology? 26. Listen to part of a conversation between a student and a professor in the professor's office.
Oh, Dr. Williams, I expected to leave you a note since this is not one of your office hours. But I would really appreciate a few minutes of your time. I'm Beverly Jackson, and I'm in your 2 o'clock political science class.
Yes, Beverly, I remember you. You always sit in the front.
I do. I really like the class, and I want to be able to see all the slides and videos.
Good. So what can I do for you?
I'm hoping you can help me. I have a family emergency, and I am needed at home for at least a week. That means I'll have to miss your Wednesday and Friday class, but I'm sure that I can be back by class on Monday.
Oh.
I know that attendance is part of the evaluation, and I want to get a good grade in the class. Is there any way you could give me an excused absence or something so it won't bring my grade down? I would be happy to do extra work to make up the time.
Oh, don't worry about that, Beverly. You never miss class, and I'm sure you have a very good reason to be absent this time. I'll be glad to give you an excused absence for Wednesday and Friday. Is there anything else I can do?
Not really. I've already arranged to get the notes from Gloria Hayes. She and I always study together.
Fine. Well, when you get back and you read Gloria's notes, let me know if there's anything you don't understand. Sometimes it's hard to understand someone else's notes. If you need some clarification, I can meet with you for a few minutes before class on Monday.
That's very nice of you, Dr. Williams. I'll call to set up an appointment if I need to, but I think I'll be okay with the notes. Thanks for the excused absence.
You're very welcome, and I hope that everything goes well for you at home.
Thank you, Dr. Williams. I really appreciate it.
26. Why did the student want to see the professor? 27. What is the student's problem? 28. What does the professor offer to do? 29. What is the professor's attitude in this conversation? 30. Listen to part of a talk in a history class.
The first permanent settlement was made in San Francisco in 1776, when a Spanish military post was established on the end of that peninsula. During the same year, some Franciscan fathers founded the Mission San Francisco de Assis on a hill above the post. A trail was cleared from the military post to the mission, and about halfway between the two, a station was established for travelers called Yerba Buena, which means good herbs. For 13 years, the village had fewer than 100 inhabitants. But in 1848, with the discovery of gold, the population grew to 10,000. That same year, the name was changed from Yerba Buena to San Francisco. By 1862, telegraph communications linked San Francisco with eastern cities, and by 1869, the first transcontinental railroad connected the Pacific coast with the Atlantic seaboard. Today, San Francisco has a population of almost 3 million. It is the financial center of the West and serves as the terminus for trans-Pacific steamship lines and air traffic. The Port of San Francisco, which is almost 18 miles long, handles between 5 and 6 million tons of cargo annually. If you travel to San Francisco, you will see the most identifiable landmark, the Golden Gate Bridge. The bridge, which is more than 1 mile long, spans the harbor from San Francisco to Marin County and the Redwood Highway. It was completed in 1937 at a cost of $32 million and is still one of the largest suspension bridges in the world.
30. What is the main purpose of this talk? According to the speaker, what was the settlement called before it was renamed San Francisco? 32. According to the speaker, what happened in 1848? 33. How long is the Golden Gate Bridge? 34. Listen to a talk by an English professor. Transcendentalism began with the formation in 1836 of the Transcendental Club in Boston, Massachusetts, by a group of artists and writers. This group advanced a reaction against the rigid Puritanism of the period, especially insofar as it emphasized society at the expense of the individual. One of the most distinguished members of the club was Ralph Waldo Emerson, who served as editor of the literary magazine Dial. His writing stressed the importance of the individual. In one of his best-known essays, Self-Reliance, he appealed to intuition as a source of ethics, asserting that people should be the judge of their own actions without the rigid restrictions of society. From 1841 to 1843, Emerson entertained in his home the naturalist and author Henry David Thoreau, who also became a member of the Transcendental Club. Probably more than any other member, he demonstrated by his lifestyle the ideas that the group advanced. He preferred to go to jail rather than to pay taxes to the federal government for a war of which he did not approve. Upon leaving Emerson's home, Thoreau built a small cabin along the shores of Walden Pond near Concord, Massachusetts, where he lived alone for 2 years. Devoting himself to the study of nature and to writing, he published an account of his experiences in Walden, a book that is generally acknowledged as the most original and sincere contribution to literature by the Transcendentalists. 34. What does the lecturer mainly discuss? 35. During which century did this literary movement develop? 36. According to the lecturer, what did the Puritans do? 37. What is Walden? Listen to part of a conversation between a student and a librarian.
Do you have any experience working in a library?
No, not as an employee. But I am working toward my doctorate at the university, and I have spent a great deal of time doing my own research in the library. I'm finishing my dissertation now.
So you are familiar with the electronic search equipment?
Yes, I am. I used several databases for my review of the literature in my dissertation, and I know how to use most of the search equipment that you have here because this is where I am doing most of my own research.
Good. Can you think of anything else that would qualify you for the job?
Yes. I like helping students. My undergraduate degree was in education, and I was a high school teacher for 12 years before I came back to school. The ad says that you want someone to show new students how to do computer searches for their term papers, and I think that my teaching experience would be very useful.
Good, good. But what about the hours? If you are working on your dissertation, will you be able to work? This job requires 20 hours of your time per week, and the hours are not regular. You see, in addition to helping students one-on-one, we make appointments for faculty to bring their classes to the library for orientation before they make their first term paper assignments.
That sounds very interesting. I feel that I can handle the job now. I have most of my own research finished, and I'm writing my dissertation. I plan to do that after work and on my days off.
So you aren't taking any classes now?
No, that's another advantage I have. I can schedule my time around the appointments.
And if you are the successful candidate, when could you start?
Right away.
38. What is the purpose of this conversation? Thirty-nine. Who is the man? 40. What does the man need to do when he is not working? 41. When would the man be available? 42. Listen to part of a lecture on solar heating.
In general, solar heating requires a solar collector, a water or air distribution system, and a storage system. Most of the time, a solar collector is mounted on the roof of a building at a somewhat steep angle, positioned with a southern exposure. In the hot water system that I am going to show you, the collector is a glass plate with another plate under it, and an air space between the two through which water can be pumped. I think it will make more sense when you see the model, so let's look at it now. Notice that water that has been heated by the sun is pumped in closely positioned tubes through the space between the plates. The hot water is then pumped to a storage tank, and warmed air is circulated to the other side of the building with a fan. You will also see a backup heater in this system, usually a conventional furnace, because only about 20 to 30% of the solar energy can actually be used in this design. The supply air moves across the space to be heated and enters the return air exchanger, where it rises and, with exposure to the sun, begins heating again to raise the temperature of the water in the tubes below. So the process begins again. Of course, one of the problems with solar heat is the intermittent nature of solar radiation as an energy source. especially in climates where the sun does not shine regularly, it just isn't a feasible option without large and often complex storage systems. However, scientists are now working on a project to place solar modules in orbit around the Earth, where energy generated by the sun could be converted to microwaves and beamed to antennas for conversion to electric power. It is estimated that such a system, although costly and somewhat cumbersome, could potentially generate as much power as 5 large nuclear power plants. The principle would be basically the same as that of the much simpler model that I showed you. A solar collector, an air distribution center, and a storage system would be required. So if you understand the model here, you can understand even the most complex solar heating unit.
42. Which two requirements are considered when mounting a solar collector on a roof? Identify the fan in the solar heating system. 44. What problem does the professor point out? 45. Why does the professor mention the project to place solar modules in orbit? 46. Listen to part of a conversation between a student and a secretary in the tutoring center.
Excuse me, is this where I request a tutor?
Yes, it is. Which course do you need help in?
English.
English language or literature?
Composition, really. I seem to have a hard time figuring out how to write my essays.
Oh, well, we have some excellent tutors for that.
My grades are really good in math and science, but I can't figure out how to organize my writing.
When would you be able to come in for tutoring? Do you have classes in the afternoon?
Just on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I only have morning classes on Tuesday and Thursday.
Good. Some of our best tutors for English work in the afternoon. I could set you up with Janine on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 4 o'clock if you want.
Is the tutoring session an hour long?
Yes. You would be finishing up about 5.
Okay, I could do that. And how much will that cost?
Oh, I thought you knew. This is a free service for our students.
It is? No, I wasn't aware of that.
Actually, a lot of students who receive tutoring come back and serve as tutors once they get squared away themselves.
That's really a great system.
Janine needed some tutoring in math a few years ago, as I recall, and now she helps us in English composition and French.
So should I just come back on Tuesday at 4?
Yes, I have your name down. Just check in with me when you get here, and I'll take you over to Janine's table and bring your books for the class that you need help in, along with a syllabus, your class notes, and anything that might help your tutor to understand the course requirements.
Thank you so much. I'll see you Tuesday then.
46. What is the purpose of this conversation? 47. For which course does the man want a tutor? 48. How much will the tutoring cost? 49. When will the tutoring session begin?
50. What should the man bring to his tutoring session?